Bibles I would like for you. Turn with me in Joshua chapter 5. And it came to pass, when all the king of the Amorites, which were on the side of Jordan westward of all kings of the Canaanites, by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel until they were passed over, that their heart melted, neither was there any spirit left in them anymore because of the children of Israel. Now this morning our message will be planted in the scenery of the children of Israel in the Old Testament. We know that these things are given to us for our own admonition and instruction, and that none of the things that really took place in their lives took place as just a happening in their day. But God recorded it because He felt we had something to learn in our day. And so we want to ask the Lord this morning what it is that He wants us to hear and learn from this. And we want to be careful to understand what He's trying to reveal to us and not try to let our mind either wander or try to interpret or reason or rationalize what it is He's trying to say or do, but rather just allow the Spirit to move upon us and instruct us by His will. The setting is Jordan. The Jordan is the place where the children of Israel crossed to leave the wilderness and no more return to it. And the children of Israel to this day have not returned to the wilderness because Jordan speaks of the experience of the point of no return. And this is where the children of Israel were. They were at the point of no return. They had not yet acquired the promises that God had given them, but neither had they gone back, and they couldn't go back because the point of no return was there. Now there were two very definite crossroads in our life where decisions have to be made. Both took place at the waters. Both were decisions that had to be made, and in both cases, the waters were parted to allow them to cross over on dry land. They went not by the way of the wilderness anymore. So as we progress in God, you can't retrace the steps you've been in. For he that taketh the plow and looketh back is no longer worthy of being my disciple. That is called backsliding. Anytime we go back on the road that we've already been on, anytime we find that going on with God is difficult and we go back and lay down in pastures we've been in, we have come to a place where we've crossed the Red Sea. The Red Sea is a point where when we make a decision, which is baptism, to live in a way that we will no longer live, we have made a choice between serving one God or the other. Self cannot call the shots in Egypt, neither can it call the shots in the wilderness. Moses said to Pharaoh, "Let my people go, that they might serve the Lord in the wilderness, and make him a feast thereof." So from serving Pharaoh, they went to serving the Lord. And the Red Sea was the choice, was that point of decision. God brought a people to a point of decision. What was that decision? That decision was making a choice between serving the devil or serving God, but a servant I would be. God calling the shots and telling me what I would do in my life, or the devil calling the shots and telling me what I would do in my life. But at no point am I calling the shots. At no point am I in control thereof. At no point can I be assured and reassured that this which I am doing is part of my own doing. I can be part of my own undoing, but I cannot be part of my doing. For it is not in man to direct his path, nor are his ways known unto him. But our ways are known unto our God, for he knoweth the way that we take. Now we have to understand this principle, or you won't understand where we're going after this. I'm going to start something this morning. I'm not too sure I'm going to finish, but I will start right here. I will start at the two crossing points, the Red Sea and Jordan. They were both uncrossable. It was impossible for man in his own strength and his own flesh to be able to do it. They didn't cross with canoes. They didn't cross with great embarkments. They crossed on dry land. Now, the first time was a sovereign intervention of God, totally ordered by the Lord and totally done by the Lord. The second one was now a feat that took place with God and man. Man had to do his part before God would do his. And so when people left Egypt, when they left the place of the slavery to the devil, God intervened in a supernatural way. And we find God coming on the scene of our life in a mighty and wonderful way. We find that when he came, things happened all by themselves. God himself alone ruled and directed and reigned in our life, reigned over the circumstances, and imposed upon them an absolute control for our sake. Now, when we crossed Jordan, on the other hand, the priests had to go down and touch the water with their feet, with the ark rods upon their shoulders, and the water would not part until they did their part. Now, there was a time where God brought us into an absolute protection, because the wilderness was the place of God's supernatural dealing with his people. That was when we first started out. That's the way God wanted it. God doesn't want to continue doing that. God wanted to move supernaturally. That was a time like we in our church would call a revival. That is when they had a supernatural cloud of fire. They had the supernatural cloud of glory. They had the supernatural manna that came from heaven, which speaks to that divine food, the rhema food. They had the divine water, different than normal water, because normal water is in a well and you have to bring it up. Whereas in their day it said that the fountain followed them in the wilderness, and water came forth. They didn't go down for it and bring it up. Water came forth. And so they lived in that supernatural age, in that age where God did everything for them. He supernaturally provided for their clothing and for their whatever they put on their feet at those days that didn't wear out, and what he provided for them and what they had for them, they just never wore out. He provided physically for them. He provided in help for them. He became their help. They didn't have to cry out unto the Lord. He was their healer. They, as long as they walked with God and had no problems with him, he continued to provide for them supernaturally. So I want you to see here a scene that you and I can identify with today. Now we're going to leave them for a few moments and we're going to come to us. We have to come to the first point of decision. God will not begin to intervene supernaturally in our life until we've made that decision to cross the Red Sea. Until, first of all, we recognize that I'm not in control of my life. Either God is or the devil is. And I've been serving the devil all this time, and I have to make a choice. Now, God will be with me in that choice. He will help me in the choice. The moment I make the choice, the divine supernatural begins to flow. The cloud didn't come when they crossed the Red Sea. The cloud began when they left Egypt. At the point of decision, the cloud was with them. The cloud of glory of his presence, the cloud of protection, the cloud that kept the sun from them by day, and the pillar of fire that kept them illuminated so they could move at night. Whether it was nighttime or daytime, or it was difficulties, affliction, or sorrow, God was with them in it all. To where they didn't live the sorrow, they didn't suffer the pain and the anguish of the sun burning and scorching them in the day. They didn't suffer the chills and the ice-cold weather that wildernesses know in the middle of the night. The extremes of temperatures, they couldn't have existed without that. That was divine intervention. That's a divine intervention. And when we make a choice to serve God, that choice will lead us to the baptism of water, and it will lead us to the baptism of the Spirit. And when we've made that choice, divine intervention begins. I now have started to serve a new God. Now this God was good to serve and was easy to serve because it was all supernatural. He did everything for us. The wilderness was a place of revelation. The wilderness is a place where they knew the holiness of God. The wilderness is a place where he revealed the fire. You see, a lot of people made that decision. They were baptized, filled with the Holy Spirit, and never walked the wilderness experience. They stayed on the shores of the Red Sea. But moving with God is an unfolding revelation. It's an ever-moving process. Anytime you stay, you die. Well, there's no enemies here. It's real nice here. But remember one thing. The water followed the children of Israel. It didn't stay with those stragglers that decided it was too hard to go on. Therefore, you dry up. No water. You have to find your own supply. Number two, the manna from heaven that came from God, the rhemas, will dry up and you will be left now with just natural food to sustain you. Spiritually, you begin to die. God's purpose, God's plan, wasn't to leave him in the wilderness. God's plan wasn't even to leave him in Egypt. God's plan wasn't even to, how can I say this, to leave him in Canaan before they ever came into Egypt. God's plan and his promise to Abraham is that he would take him to a land flowing with milk and honey. A land that they had not labored for, but their enemies had labored for them. And when the cup of their iniquity was through and filled, that God would take that land from them and give it to another. But God said when their iniquity had come to a full point, that God would take their land and give it to his people. Now remember that God's purpose was to take them to the land flowing with milk and honey, and they could not come into that experience until they went through the Jordan, which is the point of no return. They had already been baptized in the Spirit, according to Paul. They'd already been baptized in water. They'd already had the revelations and revivals, and the revelation of God had been true and real to their soul, and they had walked with God. And I said that that was a place where God ruled and moved supernaturally for us. But now, here comes the point that God wanted them to cross, and the point that most of them could not cross and did not cross. What point was it? It was when they crossed from the place where God did everything for them to where God did everything with them. Now, God did not want to stop there either. God said, conquer the land. And when it was through, the purposes of God is to take us to a place where God fights and moves and lives through us. That's the end result. First of all, none of God. Second of all, God doing everything for us. Third, God doing everything with us. And fourth, God doing everything through us. Now we want to get there. But to get there, we have to pass Jordan. To get there, there has to be a place where we step out in faith. And God said, I want you to go into Canaan. I have opened that land. And he spoke to Joshua and he said, all right, arise, Joshua. The time has come. We're ready. He said, Joshua cried. He said, arise, take the people in. Arise, take the people in. Now remember that God has been calling us to Bethel. But before we get to Bethel, we have to learn how the children of Israel got to Bethel. Remember that Bethel was a place where Abraham built an altar just out of Ai and just out of Bethel. There were altars there. It made places of worship there. Jacob also, when he built the altar, the first time he had the dream, revelation of God, and then the second time, when God said, go back and reveal that altar and live there. Now God said to the seed of Abraham, Go to Bethel and live there. But the Lord has a lot of things He wants us to go through before we come into our possession, before we come into our dwelling place, before we come into the place where we will reside permanently. You go through a lot of places. Egypt, remember, was a place where they just went through for a while. You say, well, 400 years is a long while, but it was still a while. It wasn't forever. They didn't stay there. It's not Israel today either. Then they went into the wilderness. God didn't make a nation in the wilderness. The time passed. So it was 40 years instead of 4 months. But still, it came to pass. Now they're at Jordan. And it came to pass. And where are they? At Gilgal. And what happened at Gilgal? Did they stay forever? No. It too came to pass. It has to in all of our life. But what was Gilgal? What was this place of Gilgal? I want us to look at it now, in chapter 5. I'm going to skip a few verses and I'm going to come back to them later. And in verse 9, the Lord said to Joshua, this day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from off of you, wherever the name of the place was called Gilgal, unto this day. And the children of Israel encamped. Now, that wasn't a permanent dwelling place. They just encamped. The children of Israel encamped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month, even the plains of Jericho. Now, let me stop just there before we go on. What was Gilgal? Gilgal was a place between Jordan, which was across from the wilderness, and Jericho. It's the in-between Jordan and Jericho. Now remember that we read that the hearts of the people in Jericho and the nations thereof that surrounded the city were melting with fear. They were very fearful. They had heard what God had done at the Red Sea. Now He's opening Jordan and letting these people out while they were in the wilderness. That's fine. Now God lets them into their territory. First of all, I want you to know that the place that God reserved for us is enemy territory. The place that God reserved for us is filled with demons and devils and Satan himself. God didn't prepare a place for us in paradise. God prepared for us a place. He prepared for us a table in the presence of our enemies. Now this is God's way. It's not our way, but it's God's way. Now they were surrounded by the impossible behind them. When the Jordan shut off, when Jordan was cut off, they walked through it. When it began to flow again, they could no longer go back. On their back side, they had Jordan. On the front side, they had Jericho. And they were trapped. You either launch out and go forward, or you die in Gilgal. But God didn't call us to Gilgal. He called us to Bethel. And so there they were. Because of those that had made the decision not to cross, there they were, going around in circles. In fact, they weren't even doing that, because that was Gilgal. They were just in one place. They could climb the mountain and see all the good land, but they couldn't go in it. They couldn't participate of it. Couldn't have any part of it. The revelations and the supernatural of God still continued. Now I want to stop for just a moment here before I take you actually and literally into Gilgal and we live that experience. I want to take you back here. I want to tell you what influenced the decision of the children of Israel to stay where they were and not go where they were to go. You know what it was? The same thing that's influencing America. And the same thing that's influencing the church today, so much so that the tragedy has become so strong and powerful that even sects and cults are picking it up like the New Age. We want to live in the supernatural. We want to live with God where He provides everything supernatural. Healing, the miracles, the manna, the rhema, the everything. We don't want to have to do anything about it. We don't want to have to walk with God. We want Him to do everything for us. It's the world of being comfortable. Manna, it just came down every morning. You didn't have to work for it. They didn't have to go out and till the ground. If they went into Canaan, they had to till the ground. It was God with them. They had to do it, and God was with them to do it. Be strong and be courageous, he said of Joshua. As the chapter starts, he said, be of good courage because I am what? With you. Not for you. But Joshua and Caleb had come to the place by resting before God where they realized they couldn't just live with this God that blessed and blessed and blessed and blessed and live with a supernatural, a revelation, a revival, and living high in the sky all along. But they knew that they had to walk with God on the earth until He proved Himself their God and that He was with them, not for them. You see, Jordan is a point of no return between God doing everything for you and God doing things with you. You can't go back on that experience. So what influenced the children of Israel to stay there is the same thing that's influencing Christian people today. So much so that we're being influenced by all these theories and thoughts of New Age movement and cults. Why? Because they just believe in this good God that's going to do everything for you. Everything's out of you. You don't have to be sick. He's going to heal you. You don't have to work. He'll provide. God said, get up, take the Ark of the Covenant away from these experiences. I'm going to go with you in a coffer. I'm not going to be there in the cloud. I'm not going to be there in the ways you used to know me. And so now we're going to move into new ground. Point number two I want to make to you today. That is the main reason why people don't move on with God. It's the main reason why a lot of Christians in the world persecute those who move on to God in the new realm. It's because those who got used to God moving in a certain way cannot tolerate God moving in another. If God moves in a cloud, how can He move in a ship? If God rains down matter from heaven, how can He make corn grow? Those that make corn grow and live off of corn or something different. But we are the mannaites. We are the waterwayites. We are the Sinaiites. But however you want to call it, God calls people on to new experience and God moves with us in different ways. And He's saying, you've lived on this wilderness long, too long. I want to take you out of here at a new realm. The cloud won't go with you. Take me in a casket. I'm sorry, but if I take God in a casket, if I have to steal you in and put you there and take you around with me, I'm not going to do it. Up to now, you did everything. Why shouldn't I just come sit here and have you just... And the glory of God fills this place. It waits for it. Why should I put an effort out? Why should God be contained within the cherubims inside the box and not reveal His power, His glory, until I step into the icy waters of the Jordan and dirty, may I say, and take the ark with me wherever I go? And God says, wherever you go, I'll go with you. Those first words of God to Joshua. So wherever thou goest, I'll go with you. And I'll be with you. And I'll be your God. And whatever you dare do, I'll do with you. And what you don't dare do, I'll stay in the box. Now, that was different. And so 90% of the people, the ones that had use of their reason. Now remember this. You know why the children didn't go in? Because children can't think. They're not old enough to use their brain. So God said, they'll go in. But all you guys that figured it out, they figured it out. They had brains. They were intelligent. They were adults. Said, 2 + 2 makes 3. I know. No more cloud, no more fire, no more manna, no more water falling in the wilderness, no more this, no more that, no more this, no more that, a box and a promise. A promise box. Let me get this right. No fire, no power, no Sinai, no God, no miracles, no healing, no this, no that, no that. 12. And a box and a promise. 12. Just one. Sorry, we're Jews. That's simple, isn't it? You know why? Because the carnal mind reasons. I got to give up all this. I got to give up this and this for this. No way. For this. I did a thumbs up first, then I did a thumbs down. All right? Am I making a point? God called us to Bethel. We lived the wilderness. We had glorious experiences. In our church and in our age, I believe that this sequence of events follows Christians in their lifetime. I think this is a repeat in every generation. I don't think it just happened to the children of Israel. I think it happens to us in our lifetime. But God says, those of you who couldn't figure it out and didn't do it for convenience sake and are willing to be flexible and allow God to move, He said, I'll take them on in, but all the rest of you can stay here and die. If that's what you want, that's all you'll get from me. What does it take? It takes saying, Lord, I haven't proved you that way. I don't know where you're going, but I know who's going with me, and that's sufficient. It's the point of no return. Where if God says, I want to change the whole basis of your lifestyle, it's going to change, and I'm the same God that brought you out of Egypt, and I'm the same God that's going to bring you into Canaan. What was Gilgal? Let's see what Gilgal was. Verse 11. And they did eat old corn. Wow. When they crossed Jordan, was their last wonderful feast of Passover, just like it was when they crossed Egypt. When they came out of Egypt, that's exactly how it happened. Oh my, everything. Oh, you know what that is? That's anticipation. They were celebrating the Passover. Something was going to happen. You know what happened? On the morrow, which is the next day, nothing happened. You know why? Because it says in verse 12, the manna ceased. The manna ceased. That living, vibrant word that ricochets inside your spirit and makes you so full of life and pumps up, you leave on a high, was gone. Now they had to look at that hard, stony ground and start plowing. The manna ceased on the morrow, after the day they had eaten of the old corn. We don't like to move back. We like the spectacular and the supernatural. But let me give you some word of real great advice. Don't build your altar around the supernatural. Don't build it around experiences and the God of experiences. They are real, they are true, they were meant to prove something to you, and you're meant to go through them and onward. As your life goes on, you'll find other people experience it, but you don't. But it is alive, and God is with us. If you begin to read what happened here while they were at Gilgal, you'll understand that the cloud didn't follow them anymore. No manna, no fire. No more supernatural. The clothes wore out. The shoes wore thin. Their health caved in every once in a while. No spectacular healings and divine health. They hadn't sinned necessarily, but it didn't work either, and they couldn't figure out why. If they sinned, that was the only time they got sick in the wilderness. Now, they walk, as straight as they can walk, and bingo, problems anyway. I don't understand this. Where are we going? I'm backsliding. God is saying, I will be with you. With you means you go and I'll go, you stay, and nothing will happen. I'll stay in my box. You take me and I'll go with you. You don't take me and I'm the last place you left me. Go back and get me. God, what's happening? Where is the glory? The glory upon the tabernacle. There is no more tabernacle. That was another thing they didn't have. No tabernacle. No fixed point of religion. Nothing to relate to. Nowhere to really go. Nowhere to reassure themselves. God, cloud's still there. Oh, glory. He's still with us. All there was a box. Hello, you still there? I don't know. Put me on your shoulders and walk and find out. That's a lot of work. How do I know you will if I do? Well, try it. You'll like it. Gilgal is a terrible place. Why? Because Gilgal is the place of the absence of all the supernatural. When God takes you one-on-one and you begin to walk with old corn and find your own way, and the God of the wilderness is either your God or you missed it somewhere. If the God that promised that you would walk in milk and honey had given his word and he's still with you, the inevitable result is that you will be and possess the land and you will eat milk and honey. What is milk? All that fattens and makes healthy. Babies can live on it entirely and exclusively. Honey is all that makes sweet any experience of life and it sustains. I want to tell you something. God said, I will take you into a land where you will be fed like manna cannot feed you. Milk and honey. Now, I want to show you something else. In Gilgal, there was no milk and no honey. That was after Jericho. They were in the between. They didn't have one and they didn't have the other. They were in between those curtains. The light of the holy place hadn't been shown and the light of the exterior was gone. They were standing in that absence. Gilgal is that absence. Gilgal means God rolled away. That means that everything that used to was isn't. That means that they go around in circles getting nowhere. Spinning their wheels. And so you get to that place in your life where nothing is really happening. You're just going around in circles. Lastly, there are the verses we skip. At that time, what time was that? At the time that the hearts of the enemy were melting, but they were still ahead of it. And at the time they had to leave the wilderness behind and they'd already crossed Jordan and it was too late. At that time, the Lord said unto Joshua, make these sharp knives. Sounds so good already, doesn't it? Huh? Make these sharp knives. Not only Gilgal was a place of the absence of all good things, but Gilgal is the place where presence is the surgery of God. The surgery of God takes place. Now listen to this. Joshua, which is Christ, I want you to make sharp knives and circumcise the children of Israel at the hill of the foreskin. So they had to take them up there, and so many were the foreskins, they call it the hill of the foreskin. Now look at this. Now, you're going to have to bear with me because I'm going to get right down to the nitty-gritty and you're going to have to keep your mind together here because when I bring you out, you're going to see why it is. This is the cause why Joshua did circumcise. That is, all the people that came out of Egypt that were males, even all the men of war, died in the wilderness. The people who were circumcised died in the wilderness. And the ones that were now here that grew up during that time didn't keep the covenant of Abraham. And so now, verse 5, all the people that came out were circumcised, but all the people, that is of Egypt, but all the people that were born in the wilderness, by the way, as they came forth out of Egypt, they had not been circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness till all the people that were men of war which came out of Egypt were consumed because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord unto whom the Lord sware that he would not show them the land which the Lord sware unto their fathers that he would give us, a land that floweth with milk and honey. And their children, whom he raised up in their stead, them Joshua circumcised. For they were circumcised because they had not circumcised them by the way. And it came to pass, when they had done circumcising all the people, that they abode in their places in the camp till they were whole, because they were all very sick. And the Lord said unto Joshua, this day have I rolled away the reproach of Egypt from off of you. Wherefore the name of the place is called Gilgal unto this day. When did they call the place Gilgal? After circumcision. After they returned to the word of the covenant of the Lord to their father Abraham. God had spoken to Abraham . Many of us confuse things and issues in the scripture, and circumcision is definitely one that we confuse. I've had people tell me that, as Paul said, circumcision or uncircumcision, the veil is not, doesn't matter whether you are or whether you're not, God did away with circumcision. God didn't do away with circumcision. Verse 9, God said unto Abraham, thou shalt keep my covenant, therefore, thou and thy seed after thee, in their generation. This is my covenant which ye shall keep between me and you and thy seed after thee. Every man child among you shall be circumcised, and ye shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskins, and it shall be a token. Now look at this, a token. As it's a small part of what the whole would be. Of the covenant, which was the whole, between me and you. And he that is 8 days old, verse 12, shall be circumcised among you, every man child in your generation, he that is born in the house, or bought with money, or any stranger, which is not of thy seed, but that got grafted in by adoption. Either because he was a servant, or because he just bought them because he liked them. You getting this? So the covenant wasn't just to Abraham and to Isaac. It was just the Jewish seed, because God, on many occasions, if you look, every time that God said that he'd make him a nation, let me see if I can find one instance of it. Here in verse 4, for example, of 17. And as for me, behold, the covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations. And in many occasions you'll find that again. You'll find it in verse 6. I will make nations of the ancient priests, because the promise was to the Gentiles as it also was to the Jews. That's why it said that any foreigners. Why? Because that was in preparation of those who would be grafted in to belong to him. Now he said that the covenant of the circumcision should be upon them also. And he that is born in thy house, verse 13, now I'm reading, and he that is bought with thy money must needs be circumcised. And my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. And the uncircumcised man-child, whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people. Not from the earth, not from life, but from his people. Because he hath broken my covenant. Now let me go back to 13 and pick up something I just passed by. In the last part it says, and my covenant shall be in your flesh. And what does it say? Say it out loud. For an everlasting covenant. Well then, how was it done away with? It wasn't. Now before Christ and before Paul, the prophets, because God spoke of Moses as being the prophet. Is this too much? Want me to leave it for later? God, when he spoke through the prophet, explained what the real covenant of circumcision was. And Abraham, who began in the flesh, which ye who were at one time children of darkness, have now become children of light. The covenant of God began first, Paul says, in the natural, and then in the spiritual. Now, although they still, the Church of Israel, lived in the natural time as a shadow of that which would come, so also we who live in the fulfillment of that which is natural must then needs be, because it is an everlasting covenant, circumcised. And the prophet announced how it would be that those who would no longer live in the natural, but in the spiritual after Christ, should perform the surgery of circumcision. And although they announced it in their days, they still performed the natural one, because the days were not fulfilled in which the spiritual should overtake the natural. I hope I haven't mixed you up here. Although the knowledge of the real covenant had already come, they had to fulfill the natural part of the first covenant, which was to Abraham, because God had said to Abraham, this should be fulfilled to your seed in your generation. But we are now of another generation from Christ on. We were grafted into Christ, not Abraham. But Christ was grafted into Abraham. So through Christ, we now are of the circumcision, but not of the Jewish fleshly circumcision, but of the covenant of God, which is through grace. Now, what did they do? Here's Gilgal. Gilgal is a place where God makes sure that you live up to the covenant. Whether you feel like it or whether you don't, you're going to live up to the covenant. Look, when God was moving supernaturally, he let a lot of things go. But when you're going to move on to God on a one-to-one basis and he's going to become your God, then the covenant must be fulfilled and they must take place. In other words, let me put it this way. Whatever happened before Gilgal happened, but I want to tell you one thing, that from Gilgal on, the covenants of God are going to be performed in your life. You're going to have to go through Gilgal. You're going to have to go through circumcision to make it past Gilgal. You'll die in the wilderness without it. You'll go on. Now remember that those who stayed in the wilderness had performed the promises. It was these that came out that didn't. Remember that. When they were in the movings of God and the stirrings of God, when the supernatural, you can live one way in the supernatural. The supernatural did not demand that you keep the covenant, but Gilgal does. It's the absence of the supernatural. That's when the covenants get put together. I want to bring out to you two major things about circumcision. Circumcision basically is exposure. It was exposure of your private part. And it was the exposure of a very sensitive area of your life that took years to desensitize and live that way. Circumcision is exposure of very sensitive and tender areas of your life. There is one place where people die in the wilderness, and that's the choice to cross Jordan, because when you cross Jordan, you have to go through circumcision. You know when people leave our church? When you have to expose your heart and the truth and the sensitive areas that are in there and put it out before someone to look at. And then it takes years to get over it and say, God, when we can live out this? You don't. That's how you live before God, circumcised. That area will remain exposed for the rest of your life. It will never more be covering. You see, the foreskins were the covering for very sensitive areas. Now remember, they were in the flesh. We are in the spirit. And the prophets prophesied this. Turn with me, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 10. Now, remember that this was prophesied in the wilderness. Or by the prophet in the wilderness. You getting something out of this? All right? Deuteronomy chapter 10. Verse 12. And now Israel, What doth the Lord require of thee but to fear the Lord thy God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart, thy soul, and thy mind? That is the principle of all commandments, the only one that endured the cross and continues living forever. Because of the cell. Verse 13, to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes which he commanded you this day for thy good, not destruction. Behold, the heaven of the heavens cannot contain the Lord thy God, and the earth also, and all that is therein. Only the Lord had a delight in thy fathers to love them, and he chose their seed after them, even you above all the people, as it is this day. Now remember that 15 and 16 go together. Only the Lord had a delight. Why did he choose you? The Lord had. Say it again. The Lord had a delight. In who? Thy fathers, to love them. And he chose their seed after them, even you, above all people, as it is this day. Circumcised, therefore, now here's the prophetic. Remember that circumcision wasn't of the heart. Circumcision was of the flesh. They were living in the natural. They were the first church. What does it say here? Circumcised, therefore. What does therefore mean? Where does it go back to? Huh? Verse 15. As of this day, what is that? That I have chosen you above all people to be my people. Circumcised, therefore, the foreskins of your heart, and be more, no more stiff-necked. Where is the real circumcision? What was the real covenant? The covenant that was everlasting, the covenant that should go on forever, that people should cut off the flesh, the skin of their life? No. What they got to do is realize that the covenant that was forever was one between God that he said was everlasting. And when the natural gave way to the spiritual didn't undo the natural. Just like the law will take you to Christ, but without the law you cannot come to Christ. But the law didn't die in Christ. The law brought you to Christ, and now as you remain in Christ, the law has no more power over you. But when you're out of Christ, the law now has power. Why? Because it is existence after the cross. The covenant of circumcision is everlasting. God wants us to circumcise our hearts. Now, what was circumcision? We said exposure. I'm sorry. But everybody who's going to go through Gilgal, cross Jordan, and continue walking with God is going to have to live the experience of circumcision. And every single person that's born in Abraham and born from Christ is going to have to live the experience of circumcision as an everlasting covenant. It's the part of the heart that hates exposure. We as people want to live hidden. We want to keep our facade. We want to keep behind our doors. And God says, you can't go on with me. You'll die in the wilderness unless you are circumcised. You may make it past the wilderness, but you won't make it past Gilgal. You'll wander in Gilgal till you die. Gilgal is a place in the absence of all the supernatural. It's the existence of the tragedy of exposure. Of very private and sensitive parts of your life from then on and forever. Because you walk with God in honesty and in truth and before man in integrity and truth. What is, you live a transparent life. Turn with me to Deuteronomy, the 30th chapter now. Remember, these were prophecies. They had to endure. It was a covenant that lived. Now 30th, verse 6. And the Lord thy God, who is going to perform the circumcision of heart? The Lord thy God. Who do you take that privacy of your heart too, and just put it down on the line before him? Say, Lord, know me. This is it. This is This is my very private life. These are those areas that are so sensitive that I never want anybody to touch. I've been hurt. I've been scarred. I've been ruined. Don't touch them. God said, I will circumcise what? Read it. God will circumcise, or the Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart and the heart of thy seed. What's going to happen when he does? To love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind that thou mayest live. Now notice here, I'm putting this together for you. Look, if you leave here today and don't understand this, it's because you weren't in the spirit, you were in the flesh. In chapter 10, the prophecy was given but not cleared. In chapter 30 now, the prophet realizes more and gives another part of it. Because in chapter 10, it's thou shalt love the Lord thy God and be circumcised. Here it says, when he circumcises your heart, you will love the Lord your God. You want to come into a place where you can worship the Lord openly, then let him circumcise your heart. Let the tender, exposed areas of your life that you've kept to yourself so many years and no one's been able to touch, not your husband, not your wife, not your friends, not anyone. Put it on the line, in the open, and let him perform surgery on your heart. Why do you call it circumcision? Because he is taking off the covering. The part that covered the very sensitive area of your spirit. And from that day forward, from Gilgal on, you learn to live open, exposed, no more facade, no more covering, but exposed in the most intimate and sensitive areas of your life. And that's how you will come into worship and live in worship. And you will not ever be able to love the Lord thy God until that takes place. It was no wonder then that Paul, in Romans, when he talks about the fact, hey, it's not the circumcision in the flesh anymore. That doesn't matter if you're circumcised or uncircumcised, but it does matter that you are circumcised. Where? In the heart. You say, well, Paul, it must have gotten past Paul. No, for a matter of fact, I don't think it did. Look with me in Romans, if you would, please. We'll go to chapter 2. There's a lot in chapter 2 on this. Verse 28. For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly. Neither is that circumcision that which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew, which is one inwardly. And the circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of man, but of God. Those sensitive areas, those areas of your heart that know the depth of sorrow and pain that you've covered all your life, you've just covered it over and covered it over. God said, you bring it to me, expose it, and I'm going to cut it off. What is he cutting off? Not your heart. Not your pain. Not the sensitive areas. You'll get over it after a while, but you're going to be sensitive for over a year. You're going to be worse off than you were before. You know what he cut off? The covering. I want to tell you the mark of those that love the Lord their God and that can worship. And those that have gone through Gilgal, the mark is this. They have been circumcised. And when you come to that place where the Spirit's moving, you have no problem just exposing your heart to God and say, Lord, here it is. It's painful. Circumcision is painful. Because it has to do with exposure. Exposure. Friday night when the Spirit began to really move here in our midst, I want to tell you that the thing that we were singing when the Spirit began to move and power began to come down and people's hearts began to really touch, be touched, is when we were singing that second verse of that song, And I'm looking here for Jeremiah. You can be looking for it too in just a moment. And we were singing, "This pretense, Lord, is but a facade to cover up an aching heart. But with all my soul I cry to thee, bring me, Lord, into reality. For in vain in these forms of religion I hide, draw me, Lord, into your light." What it was? "Lord, in vain in these forms of religion I hide." You know one who hasn't been circumcised? Those that hide in forms of religion. Folks, God is saying, "Let's go to Gilgal." Well, Lord, they didn't know what was waiting for them. I do. Folks, it's time to move on. You're waiting for the supernatural to come back. You think God just took a siesta. God didn't take a siesta. He's waiting for you to cross Jordan. He's waiting for you to cross that place where there's no return. You commit yourself to God in the private and inmost parts of your life that it might be fulfilled in the words of the prophet that said that God had intimately known us. "Thou hast known me after the inward part." To be known of God. "Depart from me," Christ said in his parable. He would say in those days to even workers that worked in power and in miracles and in gifts, he said, "Because I don't know you." God said, "My covenant will be with those that are circumcised." It's a covenant forever. And those who haven't have broken the covenant and are without. "I will separate them from away from my people." He said, "Well, we're one of the few churches that do." Folks, I'm glad we do. Because that means that we've come at least to Gilgal. Chapter 4 of Jeremiah, verse 4. You can read more on circumcision too later on if you'd like, and check out 1 Corinthians 7:19. And I'm going to read from Jeremiah 4:4 because you see these things the prophets were prophesying before things ever took place. "For thus saith the Lord to the men of Judah and Jerusalem, break up your fallow ground." What does that mean? Leave the wilderness and cross Jordan. Break up the fallow ground. Sow not among thorns. Circumcise yourself to the Lord. Take away the foreskins of your heart, ye men of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem, lest my fury come forth like fire and burn that none can quench it because of the evil of your doing. So therefore, declare ye in Judah, which is what he's doing this morning, and publicly in Jerusalem, and say, blow ye the trumpet in the land. Gather yourself together, cry ye, and say, assemble yourselves, and let us go into the defense city. I want to tell you that there's no weapon greater for me to face the devil with than weakness and lowliness. Exposure of heart. When I come to God and tell him, whether it's before you or whatever, there's nothing here. Expose to my weakness. Expose to the truth. And God looks upon the earth and calls his own. He said, I chose you to make you my people, those of you who are circumcised with my covenant. And when I look down on the earth and I see all these people totally exposed to me, totally exposed to the enemy, totally weak and helpless, he said, I will be their God. I will be their God. They are the ones that are going to do exploits. They are the ones that are going to walk with me. They are the ones I will walk with. Oh, Father, tear away these facades. Tear away the foreskins of our hearts. Cut them off with a sharp knife of your spirit. Do away with them until we can be a people as you call us to be and quit waffling in the wilderness and get on with it. Mighty Joshua, sharpen thine eyes and cut off the foreskins of our hearts. Why? Not only so that we might penetrate defense cities, like it says here in verse 5, but, like it says in verse 4, so we might love the Lord our God
Or like it says in Deuteronomy 36, so we might love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our mind, and with all our soul. Then you can. Don't ever dream of coming in and being a worshiper until the coverings have been cut off. Because until you expose yourself to the spirit, the circumcision, and you're not part of that covenant, God says you're not part of me either. Because I'm a God of honesty, of truth, of exposure. I dwell in light and everything is transparent. Unless you learn how to do that here, you're never going to be my child up there, because you'll never be able to handle the exposure in heaven. For all thoughts are known. The intentions of the hearts are known. Folks, we need to get with it. We've been fighting and fighting and fighting with God. He said, I want you to circumcise your heart so you're not stiff-necked anymore. I want to do this. Don't force God to make us a church of just blessing, where it all sours down supernaturally. He will continue to give us bread from heaven. But you're going to find it on your own out there plowing for it. This pretense, Lord, is but a facade to cover up an aching heart, a hurt heart, a wounded heart, a sensitive heart, a private heart. But with all of my soul, I cry to thee. Bring me, Lord, into the experience of circumcision of the heart. Bring me into reality, into exposure. For in vain, in these forms of religion I hide. Draw me, Lord, into your life.
You prefer to walk in the hiddenness of your heart? You do it. I'm only here to show you a way that's higher. And whether the world cannot understand it, and other Christians cannot understand it, you can. And God's given you that light this morning, and you will be responsible for that light. Abraham didn't go chasing his servants around. God said, I'll include them in my family if they'll expose themselves and allow themselves to be circumcised. This thing is a very precious thing. But God's not going to go chasing you around. And right there where you are, you're going to make your decision. You're either going to cross Jordan or you're going to stay in the wilderness. Just like you made a decision to leave the world and walk with God and serve Him. This is the hour of decision. I want you to make that decision in your heart today. You are the only one that can come to the Lord right where you are and say, Lord, here I am. I've run from this. I've not tolerated it. I've not liked it. I was taught as I grew up to not expose my real feelings. But those were the ways of the flesh that you taught us. A few nights ago, there are ways of flesh and the natural mind, the world philosophies, but they weren't yours. And we're going to have to start living by yours. Circumcise the flesh of your heart, the foreskins of your heart, and it will be exposed from then on. You're going to have to endure a long time of healing, of getting used to the exposure and the sensitiveness, the pain. Lord, it's hard. It's hard to walk with God. Whoever told you it was easy lied to you. It takes men to walk with God. Men in heart. It's just as hard as saying no to the world and walking away from it. Every time you cross Jordan,
every time you cross a point of no return, it's hard. It's hard. And you can stay back. They didn't handcuff anybody. They didn't tie a rope one to another to ensure that they would make it. You're on your own. God has expressed what he wants. God said to Abraham, I want this to be a covenant between us. But he didn't force him to do it. Abraham went out and had the foreskin of his flesh cut, and that of his servants and his children. He obeyed the Lord. Obey the Spirit. Obey the Spirit. Walk away from the philosophies of the flesh, from the theories of the world, from the upbringings of your parents, and begin to walk with God. Behind these forms of religion that I hide, Lord, draw me away from them into your wonderful light, your exposing light, your healing light, a light that does away with darkness. Right where you are, begin to expose your heart to the Lord, if that is what you want. I can't make you walk it. Only you can walk it. There's a mighty anointing flowing right now. I tell you what, it's just going through my body in waves, mighty, powerful waves. It's going to come down on you in just a moment. I wanted you seated because every single one of you would have fallen under the power. It's happening right now. I tell you what, it's just waves of power going through my body in every single direction. So strong I can hardly stay standing. Take it as it comes by you. It's like a breath. It's like an energy. It's like a boost that lifts up to heaven.